Blog Talk Radio.
Occupy Albany protesters in New York's capital city received an unexpected ally over the week, the state and local authorities. According to the Albany Times Union, New York State troopers and Albany police did not adhere to a curfew crackdown on protesters urged by Governor Andrew Cuomo and Albany Mayor Gerald Jennings. Mass arrests seemed to be in the cards once Jennings directed officers to enforce the curfew on roughly 700 protesters occupying the city-owned park. But as state police joined the local cops, protesters moved past the property line dividing city and state land. With protesters acting peacefully, Local and state police agreed that low-level arrests could cause a riot, so they decided instead to defy Cuomo and Jennings. We don't have those resources, and these people were not causing any trouble, a state official said. The bottom line is the police know policing, not the governor and not the mayor. Occupy Albany, an offspring of Occupy Wall Street, had seen its protesters remain as committed as those located in its parrot site. At least 30 tents have remained in the park over this weekend.
Kind of good, huh? Yeah.
So there you have it.
They're using common sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They want to bust you up, you know. They want to bust them up. And let's see, there was a lot of bizarre stuff going on today. They're putting Greece up for sale.
Well, it's already sold.
Yeah, great financing available, no money down, borrowers must qualify. I put that up.
By the Parthenon?
I put that up.
What else? A few statues?
Well, the whole country. The whole country is for sale. The Troika of European Union, International Monetary Fund, and the European Central Bank have put Greece on sale, a market an analyst told Press TV. Greece's socialist government is going to lose power, and the Greeks won't allow stripping of their assets and giving off the interest. The founder of CreditWriteDown.com, Ed Harrison, said in an interview with Press TV, Harrison criticized the Greek government for disregarding its own constitution, which requires the country to default in case the national debt cannot be paid to preserve sovereignty. These are obviously going to be foreign interests which are coming in to be owning Greece. So it is basically a sale of Greece to foreigners, he added. Since last year, the Troika of the EU, IMF, and ECB have provided Greece with two rescue packages worth over $380 billion. And in return for tough austerity measures taken by Athens, Greece must persuade both the EU and the IMF that it is making sufficient financial reforms. Otherwise, it will not receive its bailout money, which it receives in installments. So they're in trouble, and so it's going to be starting to sell. So let's see. Oh, here's another one from them in the news. We got Maniac McCain talking to us here. Real schmuck. That's Mr. John McCain. Damascus.
U.S. Senator John McCain. Proposed a military intervention to protect civilians in Syria now that NATO's operation in Libya are almost completed. Now that military operations in Libya are ending, there will be renewed focus on what practical military operations might be considered to protect civilian lives in Syria, McCain said, addressing the World Economic Forum in Jordan on Sunday. He said that the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad should not consider that it can get away with mass murder, adding that the late Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, made that mistake and it cost him everything. Gaddafi was captured and killed last week by forces loyal to the new government of Libya. McCain, who is the top Republican on the Senate Armed Services Committee, did not specify whether he meant the U.S. or NATO presence in Syria. What he didn't say is that, you know, a few months ago, Muammar Gaddafi was our buddy.
Yeah.
But, of course, dead men don't talk, so.
That's the last year. He was a big buddy. John McCain went over there and talked to him. And a nice guy. This is back in the news, Lala, and this is really, we've talked about this past, but it's really startling because it started.
Yes, without a ripple.
No, without anybody mentioning any words. North American Union has arrived, the first official Mexican shipping truck to cross U.S. border. Beginning this week, Mexican truckers, this is from Natural News, beginning this week, Mexican truckers will officially be allowed to bypass border inspections and drive directly into the U.S. to deliver their goods. The pilot program not only complies with provisions set forth in the North American Free Trade Agreement of 1994, but also ratchets up another notch toward a North American Union, where borders among the U.S., Mexico, and Canada are virtually eliminated. For example, for years, public outcry and concern for some politicians over its sweeping implications have prevented the new trucking policy from being implemented. After all, drug trafficking, illegal entry by Mexican immigrants, and even violent standoffs at the border are already problematic under the current system, which requires that Mexican truckers transfer their goods to U.S. truckers at the border. But under the new system, Mexican truckers will be permitted to freely cross the border and drive deep into American heartland. Where the hell are the unions on this, anyway? Where are the Teamsters?
They've spoken out.
Yeah, but they should be there stopping that truck.
Mm-hmm.
For the inaugural event, Mexican trucking company Transports Olympics will cross over the U.S. border at Laredo on Wednesday, October 26th, where it will travel 450 miles north to Garland, Texas, to deliver industrial equipment. Man.
Mm-hmm.
According to the Associated Press, U.S. Reps Duncan Hunter and so on and so forth have expressed bipartisan opposition to the plan, which not only threatens thousands of American jobs, but also opens wide the floodgates of open entry into the U.S. There's absolutely no upside to the program, said Joe Casper, a spokesman for Representative Hunter's office. It's a good example of foreign interests overtaking American interests at the expense of jobs, security, and safety. The program was a bad idea when it was created under NAFTA, and it's a bad idea now. It should be stopped right away. And Todd Spencer, owner-operator of the Independent Drivers Association, an international trade organization that promotes the interests of truck drivers, shares a similar sentiment. Spencer told the AP, the beneficiaries of opening a border will be few, as the casualties will be plenty. And all Mexican trucks participating in the program will be required to have electronic monitoring devices installed. Their drivers will have to submit to criminal background checks and be able to speak English. But in reality, these protocols will do little to nothing to prevent the wave of new criminal activity that is sure to arise. It's pretty sick, huh? So you can check that out at naturalnews.com. This was...
Now, did they finish building that super slab?
No, not yet. No.
I haven't heard a word about that.
Highway, yeah. No, I haven't heard anything either. But I love this, really. This is. I'm going to read this. This came up. This was really pretty cool, actually. Now, one day we shut the system down. Okay? And I don't remember if this has got any noise to it. I don't think so. I thought it was a good idea. I'll pass on this one. I was going to play it, do it, but it's really just a slideshow. But it has the 44 things you can do to fight hunger in America.
Mm.
It's kind of interesting, I thought.
Well, Angel Food closed its doors.
Yes, yes.
Very sad.
There was something else here I wanted to.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, here we go. If you eat, you better occupy Wall Street. Excuse me. And it's from Huffington Post. And it says, oh, that's nice. That's nice.
And?
How do I get out of this mess? God damn, I hate it.
Just put clothes on.
Clothes. Close. Have to wait, folks. My computer froze with this pop-up. Google's got deadly pop-ups everywhere. I can't play this thing. I'm sorry. Just trying to see. There was a couple others that I didn't have time to play.
Vatican calls for central bank.
Yep.
This made me nauseous, just the thought of it.
Hang on one second here. Open up. There we go.
This is from off of Reuters.
Yep. There we go.
The Vatican called on Monday for the establishment. Whoops.
Yeah.
Of a global public authority and a central world bank to rule over financial institutions that have become outdated and often ineffective in dealing fairly with crises. A major document from the Vatican's Justice and Peace Department should be music to the ears of the Occupy Wall Street demonstrators and similar movements around the world who have protested against the economic downturn. The 18-page document towards reforming the international financial and military systems in the context of global public authority was at times very specific, calling, for example, the taxation measures on financial transactions. The economic and financial crises which the world is going through calls everyone, individuals and people, to examine in depth the principles and the cultural moral values of the basis of social coexistence, it said. It condemned what it called the idolatry of the market, as well as neoliberal thinking that it said looked exclusively at technical solutions to economic problems. In fact, the crisis has revealed behaviors like selfishness, collective greed, and hoarding of goods on a great scale. It said, adding that the world economics needed an ethic of solidarity among rich and poor nations.
If no solutions are found to the various forms of injustice, the negative effects that will follow on the social, political, and economic level will be destined to create a climate of growing hostility and even violence, and ultimately undermine the very foundations of democratic institutions, even the ones considered most solid, it said. And it called for the establishment of a supranatural authority, authority with worldwide scope and universal jurisdiction to guide economic policies and decisions. Such an authority would start with the United States as its reference point, but later become independent and be endowed with this power to see to it that developed countries are not allowed to wield excessive power over the weaker countries. Yeah, give it to the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. We can pass it over to them. In a section explaining why the Vatican felt the reform of the global land economy was necessary, the document said, in economic and financial matters, the most significant difficulties comes from the lack of an effective set of structures that can be guaranteed, in addition to a system of governments, a system of government for the economy and international finance. They've been molesting too many kids there. They don't make any sense. It said that the International Monetary Fund no longer had the power or the ability to stabilize world finance by regulating overall money supply and is no longer able to watch over the amount of credit risk taken on by the system. And the world needed a minimum share body of rules. In other words, they want to see what they want to do is set this whole sucker up, you know, to give to the
problem, yeah, reaction,
solution. Exactly. And they
world
also,
dominance by just a few.
Right. So, I mean, they're just a crock of crap, these guys. It's like, you know, give it to the church. Yeah, they get the idea. Yeah. All right.
They don't care which church.
They don't give a damn. This one I thought was kind of alarming, and I think this happened actually in 2007, but it's got escalated considerably since. I'm not really sure if I think this plays all right.
Oh, yeah, Putin.
Yeah, but... Putin warns U.S. against military action in Iran. I forgot, they speak in Russian and they speak in Iranian. And I got to read the credits on this, but essentially what happened was is that in 2007, Putin threatened war with the United States, okay,
mm-hmm.
and Israel, and said if they marched into Iran, then they would fight them. But they actually put everybody on their whole country on alert because they thought Iran was going to be attacked, and Putin was the one that came up and said, you do this and we're going to war with you. Also, China said it
mm-hmm.
as well. So it was really interesting, but unfortunately it's kind of long. You can get to it on YouTube. It says Putin warns U.S. against military action on Iran. And very interesting, I thought. Now, here's another that you might want to listen to quickly. It's Gaddafi's stolen billions.
Mm-hmm.
Max Kaiser explains financial terrorism. All right. This was excellent.
So we must be interested in his stolen money.
Oh, yeah. There's up to $200 billion of it.
I want to discuss this story. I'm joined live from Paris by RT's financial muckraker, Max Kaiser, of course, the host of RT's Kaiser Report. Max, good to see you there. Now, that report in the Financial Times suggests that the bankers were quite happy to invest Gaddafi's money. Does that come as a surprise to you that these huge banks were dealing with Gaddafi?
Well, what I'm hearing is that Frederick Udeh, the CEO of Société Générale, Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, and Tony Blair have all been marked for death by Libyan assassins as a campaign to rectify what Libya perceives as a blatant disregard for their sovereign wealth fund. And Libya is experiencing what many people in America and around the world are experiencing, financial rape by bankers, whether it's Dominic Strauss-Kahn or with the IMF, or whether it's Lloyd Blankfein, or whether it's Frederick Udeh. Everyone's getting financially raped by these bankers, and we can only guess as to what the outcome might be. Of course, this all goes back to 2004 when Tony Blair was in Libya and doing deals with Muammar Gaddafi. Even at that time, my understanding is that he was setting banks up in the West to swoop in and start to pick apart the sovereign wealth fund. And, of course, when Tony Blair left number 10 Downing Street, he took a position with J.P. Morgan. He went right to J.P. Morgan, and he started setting Libya up for these deals immediately, and they just was throwing blood to the sharks. So Goldman Sachs swooped in, Société Générale swooped in, and now they've all been marked for death from what I understand.
Okay, Max, but Libya clearly lost a lot of money here. What can you explain what went wrong for Libya, or in the light of what you've just said, what went right for the banks? What happened?
Well, the banks are financial terrorists, and the way that they conduct their operations, whether it's subprime lending markets that they fraudulently induce, you know, Goldman Sachs is now being investigated again for more fraud, more accounting fraud, more criminality. Lloyd Blankfein wants to be brought before Congress to be questioned again for potential perjury. You know, everything that they touch, they turn to some kind of act of larceny or accounting fraud, and this is how they pay themselves $140 billion in bonuses at the end of the year in an economy that's collapsing as jobs are disappearing, as the food stamp program increases. By the way, food stamps are the invention and creation and administration of J.P. Morgan. So they make money out of creating and running ghettos. They make money out of financial terrorism. When these markets crash, they make billions. Hank Paulson and his crew made billions on the bailout in 2008. This is the way you conduct financial terrorism. And all the money that Obama has been spending to fight so-called terrorism elsewhere in the world, he would do the world a great big favor by going down to Wall Street, arresting the financial terrorists, and throwing them in Guantanamo Bay and having them tortured, of course, because of their crimes against humanity.
A little earlier, you were saying that many Libyans want the heads of certain people on the block, the likes of Blair and, of course, these bank executives. But could Libya get their money back, or could the banks actually refuse to pay what they've lost?
Well, the banks have at their disposal, for example, right now, in the United States, there is talk about the debt ceiling. And they want to raise the debt ceiling, and people in America don't want to raise the debt ceiling. So what Wall Street is telling Washington and the American people, either you raise the debt ceiling or we're going to crash the stock market, because they used weapons of mass financial destruction. So they use markets as a weapon, and this is what they're telling people in America right now. Give us more debt so that we can finance more speculative bets. We can go into more foreign countries. We can load up more countries in debt, and, of course, that will force those countries to put their folks into austerity, like we're seeing in Greece. Again, Lloyd Blankfein, CEO of Goldman Sachs, and John Paulson, hedge fund manager, were in Greece 2 years before the recent austerity measures, plotting the takedown of Greece and the carve-up of those assets. Again, who in the world has the balls to take these bankers down to the chopping block and frickin' get rid of them like they did back 200 years ago? That's the only solution.
All right, Max, just quickly, in the light of what's happening in Libya, what next? Will we see, once it all settles in Libya, whatever the outcome of the current problems there, will we see all those banks then capitalizing on a broken country and getting their money back due to all the resources that are there? I mean, what happens next? Will we see those banks jumping on the bandwagon in Libya later?
Well, right now they're focusing on destroying Greece. They're focusing on destroying Ireland. They've already got multi-hundred billion dollar negative bets on these countries, and they're, to make billions of dollars. The Moody's, S&P, and Fitch are in bed with these people. They downgrade the debt, and they're all working together. They're all working as a team. It's collusion. It's a racket. It's racketeering. So, yeah, the banks will continue to rape and pillage like a Dominic Strauss-Kahn who performs financial rape as his daily gist. That's what if it wasn't for financial rape, we'd never have a Dominic Strauss-Kahn. If you look up financial rape in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of Dominic Strauss-Kahn. That's what he was born to do. He was groomed to be a financial rapist, and he's brilliant at it. And so is Lloyd Blankfein, so is Jamie Dimon, and so is Sock Gen, and so are these other bankers. Who's going to stop them? Who's going to stop them?
Right, well, what is the answer to that? Who will stop them? It's the law of soft touch. What are the international regulations? You're getting very passionate about this. Answer your own question. Who could actually stop them doing what you say they're doing?
I believe it was Rousseau who said, when the social contract is broken, the people must revolt. It's up to the people. Revolt now or be a debt slave.
All right, Max, thanks very much indeed. Persuasive response there, an argument from Max Kaiser live from Paris. Good to hear you once again. And of course, Max will be back again with the Kaiser Report here on RT. Thanks a lot, Max.
Max Kaiser. Interesting what he said. Revolt now. Mm-hmm. All right. Five minutes, and I think John will probably be on by then. But this is happening in Ireland.
we find ourselves in this situation. How did this happen? One, Gertner stepped in. One, Merkel and Sarkozy got together, and they said that the bondholders would have to take a hit, and they caused a run on our backs. And you can see the figures here for yourself. They're the IMF, all the figures. We were stitched up, and we were stitched in.
Occupy Ireland. And we now have John Brennan just called in.
And then following him, we'll be in the ring with Woody at 9 o'clock.
Hello, John. You with us?
Good evening, Leo. Good evening, Lila. That was an excellent audio to hear there. I hope you could maybe send me a copy of that. I have a number of friends in Ireland who may not even be aware of that great speech.
It doesn't say who the lady was. It just said the woman speaks plainly about the Irish banking at Occupy Ireland.
She is probably just a nobody, which isn't, I'm not meaning to demean her, but sometimes the people who are nobodies are a lot better off, a lot better people at telling the truth. In other words, they have no political affiliations, no agenda, no corporate buddies. These are the type of people who really should be put in charge. They'd be honest individuals.
Sorry, Johnny. I'm just trying to send this over to you.
No, you can do it after the show. That's fine.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and I can't seem to get it too well.
Yeah, he'll be able to. So what do you have for us tonight? While Leo's working on sending that, what's going on with you, John? What do you have there?
Well, I had a number of things bookmarked, and then I discovered I don't have my bookmark page. Somehow it disappeared. So I do have something here, and it's something I'd like to read. Hopefully you haven't already touched on the same story too much. But I'll just begin here. It's kind of a little story I'm just going to tell you. It began as a peaceful protest on the 17th day of September, the month of the autumn equinox.
Mm-hmm.
September 21st, also known as Mabron, a very special ritual day ordained by Wicca, Kabbalah, and pagan practitioners of Lucifer as the day of atonement and the releasing of prisoners, both politically and economic. The protest began at a specific city, which was the financial heart of the preeminent global capitalist republic, a world power center of wealth and influence unparalleled in the entire world at this specific time. The nation, however, had been in a great recession for 3 years. Factories were closing their doors and unemployment had reached 36%. The national debt to the World Central Bank was crippling in every way. Inflation had successfully eroded the wages of the people by 50%. The future of this once great nation was bleak in every way. Then the message of the protesters was a simple one. The working people were the unwitting slaves of big business and corporate greed. A mere 1%, the ruling class, were robbing the people. That's the remaining 99% of their wealth and property. It was not just a single day of protests, but it was scheduled to last for many months. Eventually, the movement spread to every major city in the country, as well as other foreign nations. Now, if you think I'm describing the 2011 Occupy Wall Street and America the Beautiful, you are wrong. I'm reciting the exact history of the Bolshevik Revolution, Red October, that eventually dismantled the Russian Republic of Tsar Nicholas. Now, according to Wikipedia, nationwide crisis had developed in Russia, affecting social, economic, and political relations. Disorder in industry and transport had intensified, and difficulties in obtaining provisions had increased. Gross industrial production in 1917 had decreased by over 36% from what it was in 1916. By September, as much as 50% of all enterprises were closed down in the Urals, the Donbas, and other industrial centers, which led to mass unemployment. At the same time, the cost of living increased sharply. The real wages of the workers fell about 50% from what they had been in 1913. Russia's national debt in October 1917 had risen to 50 billion rubles. Of this, debts to foreign governments constituted more than 11 billion rubles. The country faced the threat of financial bankruptcy. In September and October of 1917, there were strikes by the Moscow and Petrograd workers, the miners of the Donbas, the metal workers of the Urals, the oil workers of Baku, the textile workers of the Central Industrial Region, and the railroad workers of 44 different railway lines. In these months alone, more than 1 million workers took part in mass strike actions. workers established control over production and distribution in many factories and plants in a nationwide hyperlink. At the end of October, following All Hallows Eve, as the Russian weather turned bitter cold, the protests turned increasingly violent and the revolution began in earnest. The Russian army and the navy refused to enforce martial law for the Tsar and instead defected to the people and took their orders and large monetary bribes and promises from Lenin and Trotsky. Millions of Russian Christian people eventually died following these Red October protests and the resultant class warfare. The entire family line of Tsar Nicholas was summarily executed in cold-blooded genocide. Millions more of Christian upper class were executed and imprisoned for life in Siberian gulags by the Red Army led by Vladimir Lenin and Leon Trotsky. The Soviet Union was born. The question that must be examined thoroughly at this point, my friends, is who were those peaceful protesters, Lenin and Trotsky? How were they funded? And more importantly, who bankrolled their operation? The money had to come from somewhere. Moreover, it is possible the sons, grandsons, and daughters of the same global financiers, using the exact same mindset that is revolution and martial law, are attempting to do the same thing in America 2011, as was accomplished in Russia in 1917. The answer to this question will stun you. An objective analysis of Tsarist Russia's economics in early 1900s shows that a singular event occurred that led to Russia's destruction in 15 short years. The Tsar accepted unlimited credit from the House of Rothschild's Central Bank of Austria. The Tsar needed gold to build his world empire, after all. He needed to buy machinery and equipment, needed to buy modern weaponry, and needed to build ornate palaces and resorts worldwide. In short, the Tsar embraced the infernal demon named Mammon without really realizing that debt cycles are debt cycles. That's D-A-T-H. The Tsar didn't realize that the Khazar Jew bankers he was so deeply indebted to would manipulate world markets and thus restrict cash flow, resulting in default and empire destruction. It is critically important to realize the most important truth called the Hegelian dialect. That's problem, reaction, solution. We've talked about this before. It is the modus operandi of the Jewish central bankers since King Nimrod and is symbolized by the Ouroboros, the ancient Babylonian symbol of the serpent swallowing its own tail in an eternal cycle of problem, reaction, solution. In short, the money changers create the problem to begin with. Mountainous, usurious debt causing chaos and unemployment. Then they use their money to create the control, the reaction to the problem that's otherwise known as protests and revolutions. And in the end, they achieve the realization of their initial goal, power and control of world government. Tsar Nicholas didn't see it coming. So will America see it coming? Well, there are researchers and authors out there who have written about the fact that both Lenin and Trotsky were Khazarian Jews. That's Jews who say they are Jews, but are really not. But they are of what's known as the synagogue of Satan, mentioned in Revelation 3:8. The World Bankster manifestos are also led by the single richest family in the world, the Rothschild dynasty. The Rothschild bloodline has been implicated in every war and revolution since Napoleon and the French Revolution. For a concise and comprehensive explanation of this fact, one should read Battle Hymn. There's a book called Battle Hymn, very, very good book, actually. Consider at this time the bragging words of Jewish biographer Marcus Eli Ravage, which was published in 1928 in the Century magazine. "You accuse us," that's the Jewish elite, "of stirring up revolution in Moscow. Suppose we admit the charge, what of it? You have not begun to appreciate the real depth of our guilt. We are intruders. We are disturbers. We are subverters. We have taken your natural world, your ideals, your destiny, and played havoc with them. We have been at the bottom not merely of the latest great war, but nearly all of your wars, not only of the Russian, but of every other major revolution in history. We have brought discord and confusion and frustration into your personal and public life. We are still doing it. No one can tell how long we shall go on doing it. Indeed, what made me scratch my head as my jaw dropped to the floor is when I went online with the Occupy Wall Street, I found that they printed out posters and banners for this movement, but they actually incorporated original Bolshevik communist signs and symbology used back in 1917 on these exact signs. So nothing new or original is in these marching orders, it would appear. Notice, if you see these emblems, that the hammer beating the sword into a plowshare or sickle. This original emblem of the Bolsheviks became the symbol of the Soviet communism, the hammer and sickle. Notice the language, U.S. Days of Rage. This Occupy Wall Street poster was the original Bolshevik Revolution propaganda icon that literally covered Russia in 1917, depicting a defiant peasant woman with grain forming in blood red. You know, I just thought this was something that people should think about. If this is what's going on in Wall Street, it's been subverted. There's a lot of good people there who don't realize they're being had. Now, what we have to remember is that most honest, hardworking Americans cannot afford to abandon their jobs and their families and go live in a tent in some park in some U.S. city for a great deal of time. Nobody, with the exception of vagrants and homeless, that is, that have the means to camp out for weeks and months in a city park. So what of these protests?
You've got to look at it this way, John. They have no hope in front of them, and they can get a free meal.
Yeah, so who's funding the free meal?
They have food tents set out in different places to help people get something
good. Yeah, they got medical tents, food tents. They got
somebody's funding it.
It's
interest to feed them.
It's all by donations. It's all done by donations. And the total amount that they've received, Adbusters actually, not even Adbusters, it was given to that organization down there, General Assemblies, was $300,000 that was collected by a number of people.
And where did the money go?
Went to feed these people. Went to food.
Who's in charge of the money?
And medical.
I think the Adbusters group is in charge of it, if not the General Assembly.
Where do they have money?
They just go and eat.
They're people, you know, it's just money that's going in for food.
Yeah, but is the money in the bank account?
I'm not sure.
I don't know the details of it.
This is the thing. They're actually doing exactly the things that they're saying the bankers shouldn't be doing. If they really had $300,000, maybe they should have handed it out equally to all the people.
Well,
who is they will?
You got millions of people protesting, John. You know, it's like these funds, from what I've read, these funds were donated by many different people to the organization, to Occupy Wall Street, for the specific purpose of feeding and clothing and providing shelter for the occupied the protesters.
Well, apparently, a lot of them don't really know what they're doing. They're frustrated. They're down there, and there's no real.
Yeah, no, I understand that, John. It's very true, but there is definitely stuff coming out that people do know what they're doing, and they're specifically doing what they're doing because they're not identifying any leaders, and they're not showing any. They're accepting all political sides to this thing.
In my opinion, there's something rather sinister. Also, they're not allowed to use megaphones, so they have to repeat like a prayer chanting. Somebody in the front says, "We are here today," and then they all repeat, "We are here today." That's like when you're in a church.
Hail
Mary, Holy Mary. It's got that repetitive sort of sound that sinks in to the brain. If they have not got the right in the United States of America to speak over a megaphone on a city street, that will be enough for me to just boycott all the other corporations and boycott everything. They haven't got a boycott going of anything. They say they had a flag down there. With the flag, it's the American flag. Instead of the stars on the flag, they have substituted corporate logos such as AT&T, Starbucks, Burger King, McDonald's. Yes, I have heard that some gentlemen did a cursory look through the trash down there. Most of them are using for food, and I'm not suggesting they don't eat or anything, but the very same things that are in the trash are what they're against, the corporate logos. There's McDonald's wrappers, Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts, cups strewn all over the place, and in trash cans. They're supporting these corporations, the bad agendas, apparently.
But let me explain one thing. The problem that they're having is they're not allowing them public restrooms. They're not allowed to put porta potties up there. So they have to work within the guidelines of that. So they're using a lot of the stores are providing them with bathrooms in order to, you know, McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, all the coffee shops anywhere that they can go and take a leak or go relieve themselves. And they're you know, buying stuff from them. So it's not so much that they're against. I mean, I don't really understand how they could operate without some kind of without some cooperation from the businesses down there. And what I read is the businesses are enjoying having them there because all the small shops and everything are getting a lot of business that they never usually get.
Well, I guess we could argue it back and forth. I'm watching my time here because I know we've only got another 10 minutes. I have the end of a David Icke clip here speaking about the same subject, about the Occupy Wall Street. I maybe just play that right now till the bottom of the hour because we probably have 15 minutes here. We'll just hear what David Icke's take on this is. And this you'll have to kind of pick up. It's in the middle of a sentence here as we go into the audio clip. Is that okay?
Yeah, go right ahead. I'd be interested to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, here we are.
And people like the Rothschild-controlled bagman and billionaire George Soros, one of the major funders, by the way, into existence of MoveOn.org, which is trying to move in, this Democratic Party-owned, cabal-owned operation, moving in on the Wall Street protests and stuff like that. You can then offer the solutions that Soros and others are offering, which are what? To solve this economic global crash, we need a world central bank. Stands back in amazement. I'm shocked. Knock me down with a feather and I shall swoon. It's so blatant. It's so callable. It's an open book once you do the research and you realize where this is going. And so it's so vital. As we've reached this point, this cusp where so many people have gone through or are going through this process now, where they're saying, I'm a slave and I'm not having it. And then they go to the next stage, which is what we're starting to see. It's so important that they don't allow themselves to be pawns, genuine pawns, unknowing pawns, but pawns all the same, in a manipulation that then takes us on to the next stage of an even greater financial and human enslavement than we've had up to this point. Because this is a vital area. It's vital not to get focused and obsessed with corporations and banks and all that stuff. It's about control. It's about human control. And the form it takes doesn't matter to these people. They just want the form that brings most control. Now, in the process of doing this, they've reached a point where the control has been going on through a banking system, private banking system, controlled by these families and their networks, and through corporations controlled by the same families and these networks. I mean, I keep seeing people say, we must have an end to capitalism. We don't have capitalism. We have cartelism. It's like J.D. Rockefeller said, competition is a sin. That we have an oil cartel, a pharmaceutical cartel, a biotech cartel, on and on it goes. And these are the cartels of these families. This is how they control and dictate at this point. But they want to go to the ultimate level of human control, where they don't have corporations, we know them anymore. And so if we can get caught in, yeah, get rid of the corporations, I'm all for that. But the question is, to be replaced by what? This is the structure they want. They want the world government, the world central bank, the world currency, the world army to implement the will of the world government, and then they want the world government ministries. Read 1984. George Orwell, real name Eric Blair, wasn't coming from his imagination. He had access to the projected agenda through the Fabian Society, exactly the same Fabian Society that Aldous Huxley was a member of, and thus had the inside knowledge to write a prophetic novel called Brave New World. They were coming from knowledge of what the projection was. Huxley, it seems, supporting it, and Orwell not supporting it, trying to expose it, but it's still the same source of where it came from. This has been going on for so long. What they want is the world government and then the world ministry of oil, which would take over all the oil corporations, all the oil infrastructure, all the oil finance, everything. They want a world ministry of health that would take over all the pharmaceuticals and encompass what is now the World Health Organization, a Rockefeller Rothschild creation, by the way. They want a world ministry of trade that would encompass the World Trade Organization and dictate global trade from a central point. A world ministry of this, a world ministry of biotech, and all the rest of it. And so they want to absorb the corporations as they are now into these ministries for the ultimate global dictatorship. And the same people behind the banking system now and the corporations now will be controlling the world government and the ministries. But the same thing, but it will go on to a much higher level and a much more coordinated level of human control. So, they will want people, protesters against the outrageous injustices and grotesque actions and behavior of the corporations, to call for the end of the corporations, call for the end of the banks. Yes, fine. But we have to dictate what replaces them. Diversity, diversity, diversity from the center. Control that people have over their own lives in their own communities, not what they want. And what I have to say, speaking now, I'm seeing happening around the world in these protests, having the cabal you were protesting against dictating what this stuff is replaced by. If we go there, more and more centralization of power, we'll live in a global fascist state within 10 years. Our children and grandchildren will live a lifetime bloody nightmare. Or we can go this way and say we want power from the center to people in their communities. So no central cabal can dictate the lives of everyone in a country or a state, never mind everybody on the bloody planet. And one final thing, you know, these organizations that move in, like moveon.org, I mean, I wish the bloody would, sooner the bloody better, that are Soros-funded and Democrat Party-controlled, and all these people. And then I mean, if people, you know, a lot of the people in the protests, they read, hear this bit, they'll be going, boo, what are you doing? Because I've seen them do it to people. Global warming caused by humans is a bloody giant hoax. It's been created to justify dramatic changes in society and control in society to advance this very agenda I'm talking about. Because if you're playing problem, reaction, solution, and you want, therefore, to present global change, you've got to generate global problems to which you can offer global solutions. Climate change. Everyone's affected. We need global laws. What's international law, by the way? Oh, international law. International law is law that everyone on the planet is supposed to obey. This is the world government international law coming into place. Anyone does a modicum of basic scientific research, they will see that human-caused climate change, notice it's climate change since temperatures started falling, when they go up again in the sun cycle, it will be global warming again. But do a modicum of research, and you find that the whole idea was a scam. Anything that Al Gore's involved is a scam by definition. He knows nothing else. And yet, we're having these organizations like, was it 350.org and these others? We must have climate change legislation. Yes, come on, build me prison a bit more. Give me some carbon tax. Let's just have it. High five. Because that's the way we've got to solve the problem. The way we solve the problem, we take our freaking minds back and stop having them dictated by other people. You must believe this, you must believe that. And I, you know, again, this might upset a few people, but you know, I don't care. When I see around some of these protests someone on a microphone speaking the words and then everyone repeats the sentence, then he says another sentence and everyone repeats the sentence, and we want freedom. People say to me, oh, yeah, but that's giving everyone a voice. No, it's not. It's giving them the right to repeat what he's saying. It's not giving them a voice. It's turning them into groupthink, which is how we got into this mess. Individual think, unique think. That is what will get us out of it. Breaking out of these patterns of collective response and behavior. So I'm not interested in 350.org. Take your bloody nonsense about climate bloody change and stake somewhere else. We're trying to bring about real change here, not selling another aspect of a global agenda. And move on .org and everyone like you. You got to do your bloody work somewhere else. Take your Soros money somewhere else. This is going to be a revolution that's going to make a difference. It's going to be a revolution of people, not organizations, not cooperating with their own enslavement, individually and, yes, together, collectively.
All right.
Okay.
To make a difference.
Okay, Leo, are we at the end of the hour here?
Yeah, we are. But I want to thank you, Johnny, for joining us tonight. And that was a good tip.
Yeah, I think, David, I kind of explained it a little better than what I did. You know, when I mentioned about the megaphone thing, it is this repetitive thing. It's actually telling people how to think by telling them how to speak. Yeah, everybody's got to act in unison. It's a group think mentality. It always has worried me.
Yeah, my belief, John, is that, you know, any way they can get the word out, and the way these guys got to play, they got to play these games because of the stupidity of the laws. And if they had bullhorns, everyone would be arrested.
Everybody should be arrested then. Everybody should bring a bullhorn and have the courage to stand up instead of being cowards down there.
Well, you got a good point there.
You got some points there, but we're right to the end of our time, and we hope to talk to you again real soon.
Okay.
And thanks for being on, John.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Okay, folks, hopefully I got your minds thinking there a little bit, and maybe next week we'll come up with a different agenda completely, and well, who knows what's going to happen. It's going to be an interesting next 4 days, I believe, given all the stuff you've told us about, you know, the
calendar. October 28th is coming around the corner, so we'll see what happens to the stock markets. I'll send that speech over to you today.
Yeah, I'd love to get that.
Okay, Johnny.
Okay,
folks.
Good night.
Now, thank you.
To the ring with Woody. Tonight's topics: my stone cold locks, NFL news, and of course, plenty of baseball. Let's get down to the NFL. Thus far, my picks have gotten me to 14-6-1, which is pretty damn good. And we're going to see how I do this week. The following three picks will be my Stone Cold Locks. Okay, we have the New York Football Giants coming back from their layoff. So they had a little two-week layoff. That was their bye week, as you call it. And they'll be playing the Miami Dolphins. Now, the game is in New York. Giants have had a couple weeks off. Frankly, I don't think the Giants, like the Jets, will take the Dolphins lightly. And this is one of those games where they're probably really going to stick it to the Dolphins. The spread is 9.5. You definitely want to jump on that before it goes up because, you know, one only bet is it's going to go up. And 9.5 is pretty good. Pretty sure the Giants will probably win by 2 touchdowns or better. Miami just stinks. The Giants' defense got healthy. You know, got healthier in this layoff, and those guys are probably raring to go. I'm betting there's going to be a lot of sacks, a lot of pressure, a lot of knockdowns, and probably not very much offense at all from the Miami Dolphins. Okay, my second pick, I like the Steelers at home. This is great. They're at home getting 2.5, and they're playing the Patriots. Patriots, you know, not as great as they have been in the past. Welker gets a lot of yards. You know, Brady is still Brady. But the game is in Pittsburgh. And when you're at home and you're getting points and you're a very good team, it's just it's a good bet to take the home team. You know, if the home team is a good team, which the Steelers are, and they're getting points, it's a hard thing to turn those points away. This is the kind of game where you might want to wait and then wait for the line to go up to 3 and then you take the Steelers. But I like the Steelers. Steelers are going to win outright, you know, even without the points. I'm pretty sure they're going to beat the Patriots at home. And my third pick, I like the Chargers. They're on the road against the Chiefs. Sure, the Chiefs took it to the Raiders last week, but a lot of that was, discombobulation on the Raiders' offense. They gave up, a couple offensive touchdowns and stuff. So I think the Chargers are going to want to snap back after that poor showing, they gave against the Jets. And, -3.5. The Chiefs stink. They got lucky to beat Oakland. And I think the Chargers are a little bit better than they showed when they played the Jets. So I would take the Giants -9.5, Pittsburgh +2.5, and the Chargers -3.5. Now, this past weekend, I, of course, watched a couple of the NFL games and a couple of things, rather interesting. The Colts are absolutely horrendous. That Sunday night game where the Saints scored over 60 points against them, I mean, it was just thoroughly embarrassing. I don't know how any of those guys even want to look at themselves in the mirror. And that's the kind of game. It's just really horrendous. And it was also brutal to watch. I watched the first half, and that was more than enough than I wanted to see. I did watch the Jets and the Chargers game. That was interesting. You could see the Jets were, like, building momentum, and they were going to, get their way back into this game. Something that I thought was very interesting, Plexico Burris got himself a bunch of touchdowns, and that's what they got him for, in the red zone. And this was, why I thought it was a good pickup for the Jets. A lot of people don't like Burris, but Burris is pretty tough in the red zone, and that's exactly what they got him for. And Rex Ryan has been saying all along, he's going to break a couple. Things are going to happen. Well, they finally did happen. Burris got 3 touchdowns. And that took a lot of pressure off of Sanchez. Also, the running game, the Jets, looks like it may be somewhat revived. Sean Green looked really good. He made a lot of good cuts. He had over 100 yards. So we'll see if the Jets can continue this, the little bit of roll that they're on, this next week here. Who do the Jets have? I think the Jets might actually have a bye week as well. I think they're off too, so that'll be good for them. Because I think when they come back, I think they have the Patriots too or something like that. I think that's what the deal is. So that'll be interesting to watch. The Jets are getting better. And, of course, they're starting to talk more junk as they win a few more games. Because that's just how the Jets are. But, their talk is greater than their ability right now. But a lot of times that's how it is with the Jets. Their talk is always greater than their ability. But we'll see. Maybe, you know, the Jets are definitely a second-half kind of team, and, you know, maybe things are starting to turn their way. So we'll just have to wait and see. A lot of big injuries in the NFL. Darren McFadden, he has a foot injury. He's a big-time running back for the Raiders. He's also leading the NFL for yards. It's his fourth year in the NFL, and usually he misses like 3 games a year. He's kind of always getting injured and stuff, and that's definitely a big whack against the Raiders. They have a bye this weekend, and they host the Denver Broncos on November 6th. So hopefully he'll be back for that game. That's a big game against the Broncos. For the Detroit Lions, they have a lot of problems. They hope that limping quarterback Matthew Stafford can make it through Week 8 day to Denver before getting rest. Now, the MRI didn't reveal any serious problems with Stafford's ankle or knee Monday after he dragged his right leg off the field following the final offensive play against Sunday's defeat to the Atlanta Falcons, the Lions' second consecutive loss after a 5-0 start. Now, after missing 19 games over his first 2 seasons, Stafford has sparked 4 stretches this year through his play, has declined with the team's fortunes. If he can't go Sunday, backup Sean Hill would get the call, and that's not good news for the Lions because Stafford's kind of the man, and Hill's not all that good. Washington Redskins took a big hit this weekend. They lost about a third of their offense on Sunday. Quite a blow for a team already going in, like, the wrong direction while trying to break in a new starting quarterback. Number one wide receiver Santana Moss might be out for 2 months after having surgery for a broken left hand. Journeyman Javar Gaffney and Anthony Armstrong will have to pick up the slack, along with tight end Fred Davis, who leads the club with, I think, 28 catches for 423 yards. Worse, running back Tim Hightower, the team's best receiving threat out of the backfield, is done for the season, torn left knee ligament. So Washington's got a lot of problems there on offense, so that's definitely not good for Washington. Okay, moving on for a little baseball talk. Now, even though the World Series is going on, there's a lot of talk about, you know, who's going to sign what next season. Now, left-hander C.J. Wilson took the mound Monday in Game 5 of the World Series, knowing he might be too expensive for the Texas Rangers in 2012, despite his inconsistent postseason. According to Rangers general manager John Daniels, he said, "We'd like to have him back." Wilson is 16-7 with a 2.9 ERA. Now, while Wilson is the consensus top free agent starter, there's a huge wild card lurking, and that's Japanese pitcher Yu Darvish, who could supplant Wilson if Wilson signs with a big market club. Now, there's a lot of quality out there, according to Scott Boras, who's always running his mouth, and he represents St. Louis Cardinals free agent starter Edwin Jackson, who, in my opinion, is not that good. The quantity of free agent starters is definitely lacking, but former 20-game winner CC Sabathia, who can opt out of his New York Yankees contract, and Roy Oswalt, whose 2012 option with the Philadelphia Phillies was declined Monday, are expected to headline the list, followed by Wilson and Jackson. Oswalt, mind you, is a small kind of guy, and he's had back issues. Not surprised that the Phillies didn't bring him along, didn't look that great in the playoffs. Frankly, I wouldn't sign him. Like I said, he's kind of a smaller guy. He throws very hard, and he has back issues, and, you know, he's getting older, and I wouldn't sign him. That's just me. But Darvish, 25, has spent his entire career pitching in the Nippon Ham Fighters, going 98-38 with a 2.12 ERA, including 18-6 and 1.44 this year, striking out 276 in 232 innings. According to Los Angeles Dodger pitching coach Trey Hillman, he put him right up there with any of those guys. There's no doubt in my mind he's a number one pitcher. So we'll have to wait and see. It'll be very interesting to see. I'm pretty sure the Yankees will get that job done with Sabathia. And my opinion is I don't think they're going to move on C.J. Wilson. I think he's going to I would doubt very much the Yankees are going to sign him. My personal opinion is I think the Yankees are going to gamble, and they're going to go after that Japanese pitcher. And to me, that's probably the better idea. I don't know. C.J. Wilson just did not impress me in the playoffs this year. I mean, he just did not impress me. And speaking of not impressing, John Lackey of the Boston Red Sox is going in for Tommy John surgery. So he'll miss the entire season next year. That's good news for the Red Sox because that breaks up that little clique that they had going on. So maybe now they won't have to shop Beckett. But we'll wait and see. We'll see what the new management decides and stuff. You know, they still have GM issues. You know, their former GM Theo Epstein was officially introduced today as the new head of operations for the Chicago Cubs. So he would like to do for the Cubs what he kind of did for the Red Sox, and that's bring a championship to a city that has a long history of not winning championships. Frankly, I think Epstein will fail in Chicago. He kind of caught lightning in a bottle, and it was more the failure of Yankee pitching than the Red Sox greatness that got the Red Sox those rings. But we'll just have to wait and see. That's just my opinion. I don't like Epstein, and if you look at a lot of his moves, they just haven't been that fantastic lately. But, hey, we'll wait and see. The Cubs think different, and, you know, they make a lot of money, so we'll just have to wait and see. As far as the World Series goes, again, I picked the Rangers to win over the Cardinals. Right now they're up 3-2. Frankly, I thought the Rangers would hit a lot better. They haven't. Josh Hamilton has been injured, but he's starting to come around a little bit. Last night's game was kind of highlighted by some very odd moves out of the bullpen by Tony La Russa. Some of these moves were blamed on faulty hearing on a telephone. Maybe there was some kind of mix-up. But if that was true, you know, if that was really the truth, then why did he call the coaches together and then meet with the media? I mean, if you had, you know, a story that you didn't have to get straight, you know, why would you get all the coaches together and then meet with the media? Well, you got all the coaches together so you get your story straight. So obviously something was, you know, not right there. But I don't know exactly what, you know, what went wrong, whatever. But, you know, La Russa definitely made an error. You know, he's supposed to be the great guy. I'm making great calls, but maybe not so much last night. Also, some odd stuff. Albert Pujols, he put this hit and run on against Octavio Detail. And, you know, Detail was throwing a lot of high heat. He was being very careful. And the guy went to steal second, and Pujols just left the bat right on his shoulder. He didn't even swing. Granted, the pitch was up around his eyes, and he wouldn't have been able to hit it anyway. But you swing at least to distract the catcher so he doesn't gun the guy out a second like that's what happened. And then in the ninth, the hit and run was on again. Pitch count was 3-2. That was like a cutter away. He swung, which was something was obviously a ball that was not going to be a strike. He struck out, and then they threw the guy out at second. So strike him out, throw him out, real ugly. So if St. Louis loses this series, which they're going to anyway, they'll definitely be looking back at Game 5 and being like, ooh, what could have been? But I don't think they're the better team, and I really don't think they deserve to win the series. You know, I'm not a big fan of Texas, obviously, but I just think Texas is a better team, and I would like to see the better team win the World Series. So, that's it for this week. Shout out to all my Woodheads out there, Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, everyone at the Northeast Athletic Club, a partner, Money Mike. That's it for this week. The leaves are falling and the winter's a coming. Man, enjoy it while it lasts. Peace out.
Whether you love tofu or hate it, there's a new plant protein to consider. It's hemp. Dr. Mike is here now with more on what is likely to be the next food to take the health food industry by storm. Dr. Mike.
Yeah, Peter, it's a terrific concept as a food group. It does contain fat, but they're good fats, and there's tons of protein. But the problem is the stigma behind hemp, because it's often associated with getting high. For most people, you'll ask about hemp. Either it's an I don't know.
Never heard of it.
The hemp seed? Never heard of it.
Or it's something illicit.
Is it have a drug?
Kind of, sorta, but not really.
Yeah, but hear the word hemp, and they first their mind goes to marijuana. The whole marijuana issue, the industrial hemp plant, it's in the same family of plants. But the industrial hemp plant is way down the chain on the levels of THC. It has microscopic levels of THC, less than 4 parts per billion, where the average marijuana plant is 10 to 15% THC. So really, it has nothing to do. It's like putting poppy seeds in the same category as heroin.
What hemp is a seed that has amazing health benefits.
The hemp seed nut, the little seed about the size of a grain of wheat, inside is this nice, soft little meat. It's about 30% protein. That's actually more protein than meat. And on the fat side, it's actually 50% fat. Now, when we hear that, we say, well, that's a lot of fat. Of course, these are essentials as well. And the good fats are absolutely critical for the body's health. Every cell membrane in our body is coated with fat.
In fact, hemp seeds have all 10 essential amino acids and all essential fatty acids, and are a rich source of the valuable omega-3 fatty acids.
Well, hemp seeds, you can actually have it ground and put it into smoothies, or you put it on salads, put it on yogurt, and it also is available as an oil. So the hemp oil is wonderful as a salad dressing. You wouldn't want to get it to a very high temperature, but I put it in my pasta, I put it on vegetables that I've steamed and stir fries after it's cooked.
You can use the meal to make flour for cookies and bread. You can even make veggie burgers and cheese from the hemp seed. So, would you try hemp?
No, I'm not 100% sure what it is, so my answer is I don't know.
Try it. You'll like it.
Apparently, the history of hemp is very interesting. Until the 1880s, it was the most domesticated crop on the planet. In fact, the founding fathers of this country all grew hemp, and the farmers who were given land were forced to grow a certain amount of hemp because it was such an important part of everyone's life. Back to 2006, those producing hemp products say look for an ensuing hemp explosion. For more information on this and other health stories, go to our website at wb11.com/Dr. Mike.
And you have a lot of hemp products.
Are you ready to try it?
Yeah, we'll show and tell. Stock in this stuff?
It doesn't contain
tetrahydrocannabinol.
Uh-huh.
You don't smoke it, in other words.
You don't smoke it.
Yes.
Sprinkle
this on your salad.
It's like worrying about poppy seeds, and cocaine. Poppy seeds are not.
Actually, it's very good. It's very nutty.
Then you just sprinkle it on your salad or whatever.
It's heavy in omega-3 fatty acids.
Mm-hmm.
High in protein.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't taste like salt, but it kind of looks like it, though.
Let me see. I feel completely the same. I'm not affected.
And it comes in a chocolate.
Let's see the chocolate. You know, you got chocolate, I'll have some. Here you go.
Here in the U.S. It's illegal to grow here in the U.S.
You can't grow it, so you have to import it.
Is it illegal?
It's the old stigma about it.
Because in value, they're worried about you.
Oh,
very much.
All right.
We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Can I have the cap? I'll be taking this home.
So we can't grow it here.
No, we can't grow it here, but we can import it.
Yeah, the most ridiculous laws I've ever
seen. Yeah. And this stuff isn't even bad for you. It's not even like,
good for you.
It doesn't even do anything.
Most industrial hemp is great. It's stronger than rope.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it's a miracle drug, a miracle food, and it's banned in this country because it would put the pharmaceutical companies out of business.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody would be healthy. So, I don't know. This gets crazier and crazier, folks. And with a few seconds left that we've got, a few minutes left that we have, let's see if I have another one that I...
Oh, where was that list of things that we were first in? That was interesting.
Oh,
it was
kind of
scary.
Yeah, this is kind of weird.
How about this?
Yeah, we're number one, okay?
Okay, how about this? We're number one, total crime.
We're number one in the United States is number one in total crimes.
Followed by United Kingdom, followed by Germany, followed by France.
They're number four. Okay, we're number one in rape. We're number two. We're number one in CO2 emissions. We're number one in the divorce rate. or number two.
No, we're number one in teen birth, right?
Teen birth, number one in heart attacks, number one in McDonald's restaurants.
In the number of McDonald's restaurants.
Number one in plastic surgery, and number one in prisoners.
We have more prisoners than China, Russia, and India.
Right, combined, actually, probably. And,
doesn't say that, though.
But we have 25% of the world's prisoners, though, with 5% of the population. And Mexico, I'm surprised that
that's
Mexico...
That's plastic surgery.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that plastic surgery
Well, people
Mexico,
go there from the United States to heaven.
That's true. Brazil and Japan.
Jackie Kennedy used to go to Brazil.
Oh.
I remember okay. that.
Well, we're number one in a lot of things. We're number one in all these things. So, number one in rape, too. That's, we're doing
very
well.
Sad.
We're doing well. Excuse me. Whoa. Oh, man. Excuse me. Okay. Now, I think I got one more good one before we leave tonight. And let's see. Let's read one here. The...
It's something you could do to fight hunger in America.
Yes, there's 44 ways you can do that.
Go back. I think that would be a good thing. Because there are a lot of hungry people.
Yeah, we get 5 minutes. This is from the dailymeal.com. And I suggest you might want to check this out, dailymeal.com. And they show, it focuses on all the different ways that you can help fight hunger in the United States. All right? Gathering together for do-gooding is what their motto is. But the 44 ways that you can do something, let's see. Wine and dine yourself. Okay.
Dine out against hunger.
Right. Meals on Wheels, always looking for volunteers to act as drivers and runners.
Walk to Stop Hunger. Some 2,000 communities across the country participate in crop hunger walks each year, raising funds. Cook for the Cause, calling all chefs and nutritionists. You can volunteer to teach a course and share our strengths. Get a haircut. Follow the lead of Farrah's Barbershop in Charlotte and...
Barbershop, right.
Well, it goes too fast.
They give haircuts.
You can slow the speed down right here.
Okay.
Slow it down. Go that way. Fight hunger with Twitter, Facebook, and the web. Post things on Facebook. Imagine there's no hunger. Yoko Ono is asking that on November 1st. Imagine what that would be like.
Let's go back one. Post hunger with Twitter, Facebook, and web. Post a tweet, blog, text, scream, yell, it all works. Share hunger stats with friends. Raise awareness in your area and spread word that $1 donation to Feeding America provides the equivalent of 8 meals to hungry people.
Huddle to fight hunger. Every point earned while playing the 2-minute trivia drill on Kraft's Huddle to Fight Hunger Facebook page is equivalent to a 1-meal donation to Feeding America. Share your breakfast. If you share your breakfast with Kellogg's by photo upload or text, they'll help share breakfast with kids in schools who might miss out. Keep kids snacking during the summer. Only 2.3 million children are enrolled in summer meal programs, which means about 18 million children are at risk for hunger at that time of the year. Text Feed Kids to 50555 to donate $10 directly to Feeding America. It's the nation's leading domestic hunger relief charity, and your donation will help them provide 70 meals to children and families facing hunger.
Wow, for $10, that's a good cause. And let's see. What's the next one?
We did that one. Glean for Good. During the summer and fall, volunteers are needed to help sort fresh fruits and vegetables grown by local farmers and distributed by FoodShare through its mobile FoodShare program. Dozens of farmers. Buy seeds, plant a row, donate your harvest. Buy some seeds, teach a family to garden. Buy seeds from the dinner garden for $5 and you'll feed 7 people for a year. Give seeds and gardening know-how to at-risk families that are given the ability to grow their own produce, making a difference on their own dinner table. Got a fruit tree?
Plant a row, create a school garden, and let's go on to the next one. Get your game face on.
Who doesn't love a little friendly competition, especially when the real winners are those in need? Philabundance Corporate Beatdown is a year-long campaign that will track your company's volunteer fundraising and food drive efforts. In addition to a flashy trophy and bragging rights, if your company accumulates the most points, Philabundance will promote your accomplishments through their press and social media outlets.
Adopt an acre, feed for miles. Cash contributions to urban community is supported by Adopt an Acre.
Make music for food. Why Hunger's Artists Against Hunger and Poverty program offers musicians the chance to raise funds and awareness through the music by donating a portion or giving concert ticket sales.
We lost our feed now, but we're in archive, so you can just read a few more. Move. Let's face it, moving sucks. But at least some of it can come of it. Move for Hunger as a team up and moving companies across the United States to create one of the nation's largest year-round service programs. That's interesting.
Pick a ticket, any ticket. Attend to take someone to Oxfam America Hunger Banquet. Guests randomly draw tickets and there's money. Grind Out Hunger is a campaign created by skateboarders that aims to challenge local elementary, middle, and high school kids to collect food and raise money for hungry children. Clean your house. Everyone's got junk. Organize it and sell it. In the process, you can make a difference and donate the money. Get your Steven Spielberg on. The Food and Nutrition Service has invited elementary, middle, and high school, junior high school students to participate in the Ending Childhood Hunger video contest, which asks the question, what are you doing to end childhood hunger in your community?
But host for Hunger. Host a food day event to support your local food bank. If you tell Epicurious about your party, you may even win a prize and a donation to match whatever you were able to raise for your favorite food charity.
Strike Out Hunger. Maybe you've already done one of the projects, Bread Walls for Hunger, dedicated to ending hunger in Massachusetts.
Okay. And Stomp Out Hunger. Take a cue from Sierra Senior Services, which held the second annual Stomp Out Hunger Grape Stomp in conjunction with the 8th annual Truckee Wines Walk and Shop. Start the Stomp Out in your city.
Must be in Truckee, California. Volunteer with the Hunger Coalition, a nonprofit organization that aims to provide kid-friendly single-serving food items to children who otherwise may not have enough to eat when outside the safety net of school meal programs.
Okay.
Watch chefs battle in the kitchen or volunteer in one.
Capital Food Fight. For $200, you can buy a ticket to the Capital Food Fight in November, which pits great chefs against each other in Iron Chef-like tournaments using secret ingredients. So you can check that out.
Shop for Hunger?
Yeah.
The Hunger Site is an online activism website selling fair trade items, including seasonal home decor, etc., the proceeds of which are donated to participate in charities like Feed America.
And that's the Hunger Site.
Turn lunch tray leftovers into dinner. Every college campus has unstirred leftover food in its dining halls. The Campus Kitchen Project uses conscientious student power to affect hunger relief. We partner with high schools, colleges, and universities to share on-campus kitchen space, recover food from cafeterias, and engage students as volunteers to prepare and deliver meals to the community. Ride the Wave, the Wholesome Wave. Make a donation to Wholesome Wave through partnership with more than 50 community-based organizations. Wholesome Wave programs increase access to affordable, healthy food.
Give to others while celebrating yourself. Mazon, which means food or sustenance
in Hebrew.
The National Jewish Organization dedicated exclusively to fighting hunger. Include Mazon, M-A-Z-O-N, in your celebrations, be they weddings, bar mitzvahs, and whatever. Go for a food run. So,
food runners pick up excess perishables and prepare food from restaurants, caterers, etc., and hotels in San Francisco, and delivers more than 10 tons of food a week to shelters and neighborhood programs that feed the hungry. You can become a food runner volunteer.
That's nice.
got extra dough, fork it over, make bread, have leftovers at the end of the day. Get your organization involved in Panera's Operation Donation. Unsold bakery products are packaged at the end of each day and donated to local food banks and charities. Help Snickers Bar Hunger. Enter the barcode number and specifically mark Snickers bars on the Snickers website, and they'll help Feeding America provide two meals to someone in need.
Their goal is to provide up to 3.5 million meals. Around the Corner Hunger, help feed senior. Help hunger relief organizations increase their resources.
Come up with your own ideas. Be a trailblazer.
So that's 44 things that you can do, folks.
And on that note,
we'll end our show. I want to thank everybody who joined us. And please join us tomorrow night when we have more incredible news and views for you.
So good night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a good time.